transcribed.
Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past. Our inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune, a fortune compounded of many things. It is the Virginia militia of young Colonel Washington. A Continental Congress meeting in Philadelphia to defy a king. And the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is the great sea victories of old Ironsides. And Peter Cooper demonstrating the first American locomotive. Let us now go back to a significant chapter in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. Throughout the history of America, there have been men of vision, each of whom has left us a portion of our inheritance. This is the story of an Army doctor, whose vision and practical thinking not only greatly lessened the chances of mortal suffering, but was also responsible for the future development of a too little known branch of the United States Army. His story and the story of his inheritance of courage could best be told by that which was closest to his heart, a square piece of cloth.
Yeah, that's me. The flag that talks. You're probably sitting there saying, how can a flag talk? Well, by the time I get through telling this story, you'll find out it's not as silly as it sounds. You know, I've been in several wars. Yep, I've seen a lot since I was born. And that's where the story starts. No, come to think of it, the story starts 6 years before I was born, in 1854. That was the year a 27-year-old doctor in Buffalo, New York, reached a mighty important decision. A fellow by the name of Albert J. Meyer.
Albert, would you bring me the rest of the dinner dishes? Albert!
What? Did you say something?
My land, did any other woman ever have such an absent-minded nephew? Oh,
I'm sorry. I guess I didn't hear you. There they are.
Thank you.
Want me to help dry?
No, dear, you best get tidied up. Mrs. Sprague will be stopping by soon for her treatment.
Not anymore.
But Mrs. Sprague always comes on Wednesday, doesn't she?
She did, while she was my patient. But I've turned her over to Dr. Saunders.
Albert.
All my other patients, too.
Albert Meyer, would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Won't you please sit down?
I'm sitting. Now then.
Aunt Bess, how long have I been living with you?
For more years than I can remember. Ever since your dear mother and father passed on, rest their souls. And it was not an easy task to take their place in your young life.
But you did. And I'm grateful for all you've done for me.
All I've done? It's been little enough, heaven knows.
Not to me. Why, you've seen me through school and helped me get my A.B. degree at Hobart College.
When you were only 19. I was so proud of you. And prouder still when you were given your M.D. at the medical college here in Buffalo.
It makes you happy to see me practicing here, doesn't it?
Yes, dear, it does. Very happy.
Aunt Bess.
Yes, Albert?
About my giving up my patients.
You will have your little joke.
No, it's no joke. I've given up my practice.
Albert.
At least, my civil practice.
I don't understand.
The Army is badly in need of doctors. So I've enlisted.
You're going to be an Army doctor, Albert?
Yes, I've been given a commission as assistant surgeon. And they're sending me down to the Texas Territory.
But that's Indian Territory.
Yes, it is. But don't you worry, Nun. I promise not to get scalped.
Yep, it was on September 18th, 1854, that Dr. Albert J. Meyer went into the Army. and found himself heading for the badlands of Texas and the unorganized Indian country of New Mexico. But you know something? The good doctor hardly saw any Indians. But he managed to keep busy with his medical duties and his other job.
Sergeant? Sergeant Petrie?
Yes, Captain Meyer.
Have you made your calculations?
Yes, sir.
Let's get out of this wind before I go blind.
Yes, sir.
Whew. I've never felt such a wind. And the sand, I don't believe I'll ever get it out of my clothes.
It is pretty bad, sir.
Tell me something, Petrie.
Yes, sir?
I was sent here as assistant surgeon. At least that's what I was given to understand. But so far, all I've done is to bandage a few bruised fingers and remove several cactus needles from Corporal Smith's breeches when he fell off his horse.
Yes, sir.
Outside of that, I seem to have been mostly occupied with the compiling of statistics on the temperature, humidity, and the blasted wind around here. Help me off with my boots, would you please, Petrie?
Yes, sir. I know this type of work may seem a bit irregular for a doctor, but as far back as I could remember, that's always been a part of the duties of the Army's medical man.
Well, Petrie, I certainly trust that the Army never discovers that, as a lad, I once served an apprenticeship as a telegraph operator. To make a bad pun, they'd have me operating clear across the country.
Don't worry, sir. I'll keep your secret.
Thank you, Petrie. That feels better. Well, the short time I've been here, we've had rain, sandstorms, and 2 cases of heat prostration. What do you suppose tomorrow will bring?
I really couldn't say, sir. You never know down here.
You know, Petrie, it wouldn't surprise me one bit to wake up tomorrow and find ourselves in the middle of a blizzard. Hello, Petrie.
Oh, good morning, sir.
Yes, it is a good morning for a change. No wind, sun just right. Now, this is the sort of day I enjoy observing.
We're bound to have others like it, sir.
I certainly hope so. You know how clear the sky is. You can see around you for miles, almost beyond those mountains.
Yes, sir. And if we were to build an observation tower high enough, we could probably see that far.
Sergeant Petrie.
Yes, sir?
Look over there, toward the mountains.
Where, sir?
There, to the right. What are those strange cloud formations?
Well, those aren't clouds, sir. That's smoke.
Smoke?
Yes, sir. Probably from a Navajo lookout. They're sending up a signal.
It's amazing.
It is, sir. Just suppose the Army decided to send out a patrol to make a reconnaissance of the area. By the time it reached the mountains, every Indian tribe in the area would know about it.
By a message without words?
Yes, sir.
But, on the other hand, if they sent their message by smoke signals, as they are now doing, the patrol we might send out would see the smoke and know that the Indians were aware of their coming.
Yes, sir, I suppose it would.
Petrie, have you ever watched deaf mutes conversing with each other?
No, sir. They use their hands some way, don't they?
That's right. Each letter of the alphabet has its own individual symbol. By using their sign language, two mutes could carry on a conversation clear across a room without saying a word.
No one could eavesdrop on a conversation like that, sir.
My point exactly. When I was attending Buffalo Medical College, I wrote my graduation thesis on a sign language for mutes, a very simple language. Now, I'm wondering...
What, sir?
Petrie, that sign language I devised and these smoke signals of the Indians have given me an idea. Now, supposing the Army had a method for sending silent signals.
Smoke signals?
No, not exactly. I was thinking of a form of signaling on which an opposing force couldn't, as you put it, eavesdrop. If such a means of signaling could be evolved, what value do you think it would have?
Well, sir, if the Army did have a system of silent signaling, it could alert troops of an enemy approach.
And supposing instead of using smoke, which could be seen by the enemy, or hand signals, which couldn't be seen at all from a great distance, supposing we use some object like a flag of some sort on a standard.
A flag? Just how would a message be sent?
By different positions of the flag. Here, let me show you with this branch. Now, just imagine this is a staff with a flag attached to the end of it.
Yes, sir.
And say we use it in just 2 positions, to the left and to the right. Now, let's begin with our flag in an overhead position to draw attention to the message. When contact has been made with our lookout, we start sending our message. For the letter A, we might drop our flag to the left and then return it to the overhead position. For B, we could drop the flag once to the right or twice to the left and then back to the overhead position and so on. Each letter would be composed by dipping the flag in multiples of either the left or right position or both. That would be the general idea.
Well, certainly sounds like it works, sir.
It will, Petrie. Why, the signal alphabet could be learned in no time at all.
Just one thing I wonder about, sir.
What's that, Petrie?
Do you think the War Department will approve of the idea?
Now, that was a question Albert Meyer couldn't answer. But that didn't stop him. No, sir. The more he thought about the idea of signaling with flags, the more he liked it. He worked out his alphabet, thought up a design for his flags. And when his tour of duty was up in Texas, he returned to Washington to present his idea to the Secretary of War, John Floyd.
Sit down, Captain Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Well, how'd you find your duty in the Texas Territory?
Interesting, sir. Very interesting. Mm. Though it was hardly an enviable duty for an assistant surgeon.
Oh, no broken bones to mend, no open wounds to sew up, is that it?
Well, something like that, sir. But it was not to complain of my assignment that I asked for this interview.
Well, I know, yes. I've been hearing talk about some sort of flag-waving system you worked out. Will you a cigar?
No, thank you. Yes, I did come here to talk to you about my signal system.
Well, Meyer, what's it all about?
Sir, I've worked out a system for the transmitting of messages by means of a flag.
Flag, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, go on. How does your system work? Or does it?
The method is very simple. The signalman sends his message simply by swinging the flag or torch, if the message is being sent at night, from an overhead position, either to the right or the left. And each letter of the alphabet can be represented by no more than four such motions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You feel such a method of signaling would be of some sort of benefit to the Army, is that it?
Yes, sir. Of great benefit.
Captain Meyer, if I remember correctly, you stated that your recent assignment in the Texas Territory was hardly one for an assistant surgeon.
Well, sir,
Do you perhaps feel that all this, this wig-wagging of flags is more in the surgeon's line of duty?
Well, I do, Mr. Secretary.
You do, huh?
Yes, sir. If the Army were to employ a signal system such as the one which I am presenting to you, it would mean a tremendous saving of lives. And even you would admit the saving of lives is a most important element in a surgeon's line of duty.
And this you could do simply by waving a flag.
Well, Mr. Secretary, I will admit that on the face of it, such an idea may strike you as a bit ludicrous.
Well,
but stop and consider for a moment. Picture two units of a command during a war. Two units at some distance from each other. Unknown to one of these units, an enemy force is slowly gathering for an attack. Now, as a member of the second unit, you, from your post on a hill, can see the attack about to take place. How would you warn the men of the first unit?
I'd send a runner.
And if the enemy forces were between you and the others of your command?
Well, then I'd determine a way to skirt the enemy.
But if there was insufficient time for such a maneuver?
Well, I... see here, Meyer, what's the reason for all this cross-examination on what is a purely hypothetical situation?
Excuse me, sir, but it isn't necessarily a hypothetical situation.
Hmm.
Many of our soldiers in the past have found themselves in just such a situation. And a great many lives were lost unnecessarily. If, however, messages had been sent by a signal system without the necessity of runners, many of those men would be alive today.
I see. But how can you be so certain that such a system will work?
By means of a series of practical demonstrations over an approximately 9-mile stretch of water.
Where will you hold these demonstrations?
On Lower New York Bay. I've already contacted the commanding officer at Fort Hamilton on the Brooklyn shore, and he will set up an observation tower there. The receiving tower will be erected at Sandy Hook in New Jersey, across the bay.
And you believe the demonstrations will prove successful?
Yes, sir. I believe they will.
Very well, Captain Meyer. We'll set up a review board to see how practical your theory is.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Now, if you don't mind...
Yes?
I'll have that cigar.
Are you beginning to see how a flag can talk? Now let's go on with the story. Albert Meyer, still an assistant surgeon in the regular army, got set for his signal demonstrations. By the time they were set up and ready to go, Meyer had himself quite an audience, mostly army officers, congressmen, and other governmental officials. Of course, a lot of them came along just for laughs and called the idea Meyer's folly, especially when they found themselves in the middle of a honey of a thunderstorm.
Well, sir, looks like we got ourselves quite an audience, Cobb.
We have indeed, Lieutenant Alexander. But I just wonder how many of them are here because of an honest interest in our demonstrations.
Well, sir, now, I'd say that most of them must be interested to stand around rain like this. As my old grandmother would say, weather like this is fit only for fools or deep down believers. And you'd hardly call our guests fools.
I don't know, Alexander. Some of them have been stubborn enough to be called fools.
Pretty difficult to convince, were they?
Some of them still aren't convinced. And won't be till they can see with their own eyes that our signal system will work.
Well, sir, maybe they're not convinced, Captain Meyer. But I want you to know that all of us who have been working here with you and with these here signal flags, we believe the demonstrations will be as successful as you do.
Perhaps not quite as much as I do, Lieutenant Alexander. But I appreciate your confidence. And the hard work you and the rest of the men have put into the preparations.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Captain. I just hope I get a chance to try these flags out in actual combat sometime.
Perhaps you will, Lieutenant Alexander. Now you'd better get to your post.
Yes, sir. I'm on my way.
And tell your men to stand by until I give you the signal to begin.
Yes, sir.
Well, Captain Meyer, you certainly have unusual weather in which to begin your demonstrations.
Yes, it is a bit wet, Senator.
It is indeed.
As a matter of fact, I'm rather glad that we have such inclement weather today. It will give us a chance to prove that this type of signaling can be effective despite the atmospheric condition.
Do you actually believe your signals will be received clearly across the bay in all this rain?
Why, of course, sir. Our men over there have glasses powerful enough to see the flags. Oh, I trust this rain hasn't dampened your interest.
Oh, not at all, not at all. I find this entire procedure most amusing.
Oh, perhaps by the end of the demonstrations you will find it more than just amusing, Senator.
Perhaps I shall. And if your demonstrations should just happen to prove successful, it would be quite a feather in your cap, huh?
Senator, the success of this demonstration will give me satisfaction only as an officer of the regular army. I am not doing this for any personal glory. If it will mean the saving of lives in battles and future wars, I shall not consider my efforts wasted.
A most appreciative attitude, Captain Meyer.
Now, if you'll excuse me, Senator, I would like to begin.
Go right ahead.
Lieutenant Alexander?
Yes, Captain?
Your men have their glasses?
All equipment's complete, sir.
Very well. And give Sandy Hook the signal to stand by.
Well, in spite of the thunder and the rain that first day, the demonstrations began. And they went on for 3 months. In rain and sunshine they went on, in the daytime and at night. During the day, Captain Meyer's men used the signal flags, some of them 2 feet square, some 6 feet square. They were either white with a red square in the center, or red with a white center. And when a snowstorm hit the demonstrations, the flags were changed to black with a white center. At night, torches and lanterns were used to signal with. And a stationary lantern was put at the signaler's feet or attached to his shirt as a reference point for the team on the receiving end. And you know something? The signals were sent and received with all the success Captain Meyer had hoped for. Yep, by the end of 1859, it began to look like maybe the talking flag was about ready to speak. And it was a mighty confident captain who suddenly found himself called to Secretary of War Floyd's office.
Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary.
Oh, Captain Meyer, good morning. Good morning. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you, sir.
Sit down.
Thank you.
Captain, I have quite a bit of important business to attend to this morning, so I won't keep you long. I imagine you know why I asked you to come here.
I think so, sir.
It's that infernal signal system of yours. You know, it seems it's all anybody talks about around here.
Favorably, I trust?
Indeed, yes, most favorably. Although I will admit that many people thought it was quite ridiculous at first, and of course that includes myself.
Yes, sir.
But I don't mind telling you that your recent demonstrations more than proved to me how wrong I was. Yes, Captain Meyer, this signal system of yours will undoubtedly prove a tremendous asset to the Army.
I pray that it will, sir.
Yes, a tremendous asset. That's why I sent for you, Meyer. I've had several meetings with President Buchanan and the members of my department to discuss your signal system, and I have come to a definite conclusion.
And that is?
I'm making a recommendation to Congress that your signal system be adopted into the Army.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And further, an initial appropriation of $2,000 be set aside for field signaling apparatus and the appointment on the staff of the Army of one signal officer with the rank, pay, and allowances of Major of Cavalry. This officer to establish and organize a signal department of the Army. No doubt such action would meet with your approval? Hmm?
Indeed it would, Mr. Secretary. Indeed it would.
Well, I can tell you Albert Meyer was mighty happy to hear that his idea had passed the acid test. And he was even happier when he received an order from the Army dated July 2nd, 1860.
Signal Department. Assistant Surgeon Albert J. Meyer to be signal officer with the rank of Major, June 27th, 1860, to fill an original vacancy.
Yep, that was my birth date, June 27th, 1860. Although it took an act of Congress on March 3rd, 1863, to make it official. But plenty happened in those 3 years. The Civil War came along. That's when I really started talking. There was a lot of talking to do during that war. So the Signal Corps helped me by setting up telegraph communications. But I was still the bright baby of the war. I talked at Charleston, Vicksburg, Chancellorsville, Antietam, and during Sherman's march to the sea. I talked to Grant at Richmond and guided Farragut through Mobile Bay. I talked at the First Battle of Bull Run, too. And I remember it was right after that battle that Major Meyer wrote a letter home to his wife.
Dearest wife Catherine, I take pen in hand to tell you that all is well with me. The war continues, and it gives me a great deal of sadness to see such unnecessary waste of lives. May this terrible sacrifice end soon. Today, through my signalman, I received most distressing news. You no doubt remember Lieutenant E.P. Alexander, who assisted me during my signal demonstrations in New York Bay. I learned today that he is now Captain Alexander and officer in charge of the Confederate Signal Corps. He, who was once my friend, is now my enemy. Is war then so necessary that it turns friend against friend and brother against brother? I shall write again soon. Give the children my love. As ever, your devoted husband, Albert.
Yeah, the going was pretty rough back there during the Civil War. But at least I did my share to bring the war to an end. Then my Signal Corps family started to grow, and Major Meyer organized a smooth-working telegraph system for the Army, and he pioneered the Army's work in weather observation. That's where the United States Weather Bureau came from. And he founded the units of the service known as the Air Corps, now our great United States Air Force. But that was only a small part of my family's work, you understand? You just go through the history of any war the United States Army's been in. Look through its peacetime record, too. you'll find the Signal Corps is right in there pitching. Well, let me give you a couple of statistics. At the end of the Civil War, for instance, there were 268 officers and 2,350 enlisted men in the Signal Corps. During World War II, the peak strength of the Corps was 27,000 officers and 328,000 enlisted men. Some difference, huh? And my family's done a lot more than that since I first started to talk in 1860. It's developed the field telephone, radar, and aerial photography, the walkie-talkie, remote-controlled amphibious craft, electronic recording of training films, teletypewriters, tactical television. And it hasn't stopped producing yet. Yep, my family's getting mighty big. But just don't you forget one thing. I was the firstborn. After all, there maybe wouldn't be a Signal Corps today if it wasn't for me. Me and a small-town doctor named Albert J. Meyer.
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We are privileged this evening to hear from the past National Commander of the American Legion, Department of Michigan, Mr. Raymond J. Kelly.
Americans throughout their history have been ready and proud to defend their freedoms. When our country's defenders are stationed in distant lands, however, their appreciation of our American way of life is increased. News from home, contact with those in the hometown, becomes most important. I know this very well because my youngest son is now stationed in Korea. 2 years ago, the American Legion, realizing this very real need, designed and initiated an unusual program. That program is Hometown USA. Hometown has sent countless thousands of tape-recorded personal messages to our armed forces overseas. And through the cooperation of 2,100 radio stations, has broadcast millions of GI dedicated tune requests to friends and families here in the States. Since the cessation of Korean hostilities, the need is even greater for maintaining high morale abroad. The governor of Hawaii undoubtedly had this in mind when he recently proclaimed this month of August as American Legion Hometown USA Month. Some lucky hometown tune request winner in the United States will fly to visit a member of our military personnel on that island in September. Hometown USA is in the best American tradition. In war or peace, patriotism of the people from hometowns throughout our land constitute the strength and beauty which is our American inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Raymond J. Kelly. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history to a time when Americans, dreaming of the future, forged that which we possess today. Today's story, The Flag That Talks, was written by Milt Kahn and featured Marvin Miller as our narrator and James McCallion as Captain Albert J. Meyer. Included in the cast in order of their appearance were Maudie Prickett, Bud Whittem, Victor Rodman, Joe Cranston, and Frank Gerstle. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Storm speaking.
Transcribed. Senator Albert Gore will meet the press tonight on most NBC radio stations.